Get your notes out. Ha, ha, ha. We're going to look at the book of Exodus this morning and title this The Great Escape. The Great Escape. Israel is now leaving Egypt, where they have been in bondage for hundreds of years. Slaves, abused, misused. And now God is delivering them as he promised Abraham hundreds of years before that he would. So we're going to take a look at this, and it's going from chapter 13 all the way through 14. So we're going to kind of make some observations as we read through here, and then we're going to just address some things to apply to our lives. So if you would, read with me Exodus chapter 13. Starting with verse 17. And it says, when Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country, though that was shorter, for God said, if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So God led the people around the desert toward the Red Sea, and the Israelites went up out of Egypt armed for battle. So we have the Jewish people leaving after the death angel came through and killed the firstborn son of every family that did not have their house painted with the blood of the lamb that was sacrificed around the doorpost and the sides of the doorway. And so they're leaving. And if God was going to lead them in the most kind of like Google Map way, where the fastest route, it would have gone right through the Philistine area and into the land of Canaan, the promised land. But the Philistines were quite powerful, quite militarily, very strong. And God said, you know, I told Abraham that I would judge the Canaanites, the Amorites, but I didn't say anything about the Philistines. They're not ready for judgment yet, but these folks are. So if we go in here and go to battle, I just think it's better that I move around, because if they go to battle with them, it's going to be a really tough thing, and they may just be totally intimidated and want to go back to Egypt. And so he knows people. You ever realize that God knows people really well? He knows them. So he decided to have them go. And it says here that they went, the Israelites went up out of Egypt armed for battle. Actually, it's not really, that's a kind of a dubious translation. It's more like they were in military formation. In other words, they were being organized in groups of thousands, 500, 100, you know, 50, 10, and they were being organized like a military force would be organized, but they didn't really have a whole lot of armaments. You know, it's not like the Egyptians said, hey, you need any swords, any shields, got any spears on you, how about this? And you know what, we have a training class on military tactics here next week, we're at the temple, and no, they didn't have any of that. They didn't know how to use a sword. They didn't know how to really fight. They've been slaves all this time. And so we find them going on. It says, Moses took the bones of Joseph with him because Joseph had made the sons of Israel swear an oath. He had said, God will surely come to your aid, and then you must carry my bones up with you from this place. Joseph has been dead a long time. It's probably over 400 years since he's passed away. And he was going on a promise that was made to Abraham a couple hundred years before that. So God is faithful. He doesn't necessarily follow our time schedule and how we decide how it should be fulfilled and what time frame it should be done. But he always does fulfill his promise. And this is just an indication here that Joseph was trusting in the Lord that this would happen, and it did, even though it'd be hundreds of years later. Now, verse 20 says, after leaving Succoth, they camped at Etham on the edge of the desert. And by day, the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so that they could travel by day or night, and neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left its place in front of the people. So here we are. Let's give you a little context to this. These people have never known anything but the land of Goshen. They have had no experience other than being slaves with people who were masters over them, who dictated how their life would go, when they could move, when they had to stay, when they could eat, when they could do this, when they could do that. Their life was controlled, and they had no really knowledge of the surrounding countries or what things are besides their little area and their little life that they live in. And they've seen themselves as people who were powerless, as slaves, and that the Egyptians controlled them. So that's how they looked at themselves. And now they have enough courage because God has encouraged them, because he has come against the most powerful nation in the world at that time and has humiliated them, brought them down and humbled them. And you see this plague happening, and you're a slave, and you see this plague happening, and it's not happening to you, and it's not happening to your fellow Jews. It's only happening to the Egyptians. Then another plague comes and devastates them, and it only happens to them, and it doesn't happen to you. Then you see another plague come, and another plague come, and another plague come, one after the other, and the other. And these people are being pummeled. They're being humiliated, and they're devastated. Their economy is almost wiped out. And yet, it hasn't touched them at all. So they have a sense that, hey, he likes us. God is on our side. He is with us. He is for us. You know, we might be able to get out after all. We might be able to escape and live a new life. We might have a future. And so there's a sense of confidence a little bit of boldness that we can get out of here. Because everything they find is that God is working in their behalf, and he is very powerful, and he's going with them. He didn't say, okay, I've done my job, have a good life, see you later. No, he's now walking with them. There's the cloud, and there's the fire as symbols of him, his presence there with them, and he's leading them step by step. So he says, Moses, tell them we want to go south. Okay, Moses, we're going to go over here. Okay, Moses, we're heading over here. So they've never experienced that kind of relationship with God. They never had that connection with God like that, where he would day by day give them direction and guidance, and then he was with them, and his power is seen. I mean, you see this huge cloud that you know, it's hot out there, and this cloud is, you know, kind of shielding them from the sun. You ever had that happen where you go, you're outside and it's really hot and everything, and the cloud comes over and you go, oh, yes. And you're trying to follow the cloud. Well, the cloud was following them. It was with them, and they stayed with the cloud. And then at night, all kinds of creatures and dangers out there, huge big fires lighting up the area so they could see where they're going, what's happening, what's out there, and they know he's protecting them. Okay, so you get the idea here. They're starting to have the sense that this relationship they have with God is amazing. They've heard about it in stories about their ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Joseph, but they've never had this kind of experience with God. So there's a very normal reaction to this, is that you have this powerful God who's on your side, and you've seen that nothing's been able to stop him. When he says it's going to happen, it happens. And no matter what adversity or whatever thing comes against his pronouncement, it's defeated. It's wiped out. So and he's on their side. So it just makes sense. You'd be thinking like, well, once we leave here, oh, it's going to be good. If God's on our side, who can be against us, right? So life is going to be good from now on. I mean, a good God like that who saved us from this horrible situation and has lavished on us the wealth of Egypt even and has promised a new country and he's taking care of us and he's guiding us and all this. Surely there's not going to be trials. Surely there won't be tests. Surely things are not going to go south on us. I mean, thing is going to be good from now on. Now we're going to get to a life that's just beautiful, without problems, without any cares, because a good God, why would he want to bring bad things into our life? I mean, that's just not possible. So that's how they're looking at things. And so we see in verse 1 of chapter 14, there's no trouble in sight. And so then the Lord said to Moses, tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp near Phi-Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea. And they are to encamp by the sea directly opposite of Baal-Zephon. And Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion, hemmed in by the desert. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them. But I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army. And the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. So the Israelites did this. And when the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his officers changed their minds about them and said, what have we done? We have let the Israelites go and have lost their services. Now, so here's a picture of this. God is saying, I need you to go over here to the east, and then we're going to go south, and then we're going to go over here. And he has been giving them step-by-step directions. And then he says, go back where you came from. Do a U-turn. And the U-turn is in a cul-de-sac, so to speak. It's in a place where there's a dead end. There's no way out on three sides. The only way you can get out of that would be come back again, do a U-turn, come back out. And so the Egyptians view this and say, something's going on at our border with these former slaves. And you know what? Some of these building projects have stalled now. The crops, there's nobody to harvest them. There's no workers. You know, I need my manicurist, and he's not here. You know, just all these things. They're missing their slaves. And they think they've made a big mistake. And when they view how they're just wandering around and it seems like they're confused and not knowing where they're going, it only makes sense. Ah, the God of the Jews is like our gods. Sometimes they're here, sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're for you, sometimes they're not. They're very erratic a lot of times. And sometimes you can count on them, sometimes they're not. They have their own agenda. You know, sometimes you try to placate them and it doesn't work. But obviously, after all that energy expended and seeing them freed, he's taking a break. He's on vacation or something. I don't know. He's got another thing he's doing somewhere else. And now if we take our army, we can get them back. So, and that's what they decide to do. So verse 6 says, so he had his chariots made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 of the best chariots along with all the other chariots of Egypt with officers over all of them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites who were marching boldly. Just pick that little word there, boldly. They were like, fantastic, things are great, really good. And we're going to this dead-end area. No problem, things are fantastic. God is going to give us the next step, next direction. And the chariots are starting to come down because Egypt is a lot of flat land and hard. It's not a lushy, marshy place, most of it. It's, you know, dry. And so it's a great place for chariots to come. And Chariots were like the high-tech military weapon of the day. And so they're barreling down. And the Jews, of course, they're not as swift as chariots. They got kids with them. They got their wives. They got their flocks. They got their herds. They got all this. They got their tents. They got all this stuff they got to pack up. And there's a, you know, there's 2 million of them. So they're not the swiftest moving group of people. And so after being, gone for a period of time, the Egyptians make up ground really quick. And so here they are in this kind of dead-end place, and all they can see is these huge clouds of dust. And they see the Egyptians rushing toward them with these chariots, and they are no match for these people. So they react to it. How do you think they're going to react? God is on our side. He's going to fix this, right? Not really. So the Egyptians and all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they camped by the sea near Pi Hahiroth, opposite Baal Zephon. And as Pharaoh approached the Israelites, they looked up, and there were the Egyptians. It's not like they were expecting this. Marching after them, and they were terrified. And they cried out to the Lord. Good thing, good. And they said to Moses, was it because there was no graves in Egypt? Where did sarcasm start, I wonder? But this is really a good example of that. And they said to Moses, was it because there was no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would be better, would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. Oh, please. It's kind of like, when you're going through a real miserable time, when things are really tough, and you're thinking about the way it used to be before you got into this situation, you go, oh, the good old days. But they weren't good old days. You're just full of the misery that you're in right now, and you think those days were a lot better. But actually, if you ever went back in time, you'd say, this is horrible. I wish things were different. They kind of revise history. They have a selective memory. They only remember a couple good moments. The rest of the time, they just kind of forgotten. And so they've look at their circumstances, and they're unbearable. And so they decide, who's responsible for this mess? Moses. I distinctly remember saying I didn't want to come. And so they're starting to gripe, and they're complaining that, you brought us out here to die. The Egyptians are coming to kill us, which is actually just the opposite of what they were trying to do. The real situation, the Egyptians were trying to capture them and bring them back as slaves so they could have those good old days again. And yet they are totally kind of in denial of what the truth is. So verse 13 says, Moses answered the people, do not be afraid, stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. Then the Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Now, here the Egyptians are coming, and God's saying, okay, time to move. Why did he tell them? Because it's going to take a long time for them to get ready and move. I mean, it's not like, if you have teenage girls and you're saying, hey, let's go. You better have in mind it's going to take a while before you can go. Otherwise, you're going to be very disappointed, okay? So it's going to take a while for them to get it together, to get ready to move. So he says, now it's time to move. And so they're packing up. They're putting the tents away. They're getting the kids, and they're getting all ready to go. And so in the meantime, he instructs Moses. He says, raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the water so that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry land. And I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go after them. And I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his army, through his chariots and his horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I gain glory through Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen. Then the angel of God, who had been traveling in front of Israel's army, withdrew and went behind them. The pillar of the cloud also moved from in front of the and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. And throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness so to one side, that'd be the Egyptian side, and light to the other side, so neither went near the other all night long. And then Moses, so all night long, they're getting ready to pack and getting things ready to go, okay? And a wind is coming through here, which we'll see. Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. Now, if you've been around water when it was full and then it's receded, what is left? Muck. And, you know, I don't know if you ever experienced this where you have, you know, your boots on and you're going through this muck and your boot's going to stay there and your foot has come out and you're going, oh, wow, how am I going to get out of this thing? Well, they're not going to be able to go across that body of water unless it's dried out. So God says, I'm going to have a wind come through there and dry the whole thing out. It's going to blow through all day, all night, and into the morning until it's dry. So the waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. The Egyptians pursued them, and all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen followed them into the sea. And during the last watch of the night, the Lord looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud at the Egyptian army and threw it into confusion. He made the wheels of their chariots come off, so they had difficulty driving. Now, just take, this is the thing. The Egyptians said, I'm sure they're thinking, well, if those slaves can do it, we can do it. You know, and they're going to drive right through that path that God has made for the Israelites to flee from. But they did not recognize the fact that it looked dry, but it's not really dry. Dry enough for, it's not solid enough for chariots. And chariots are going to, they're going to get bogged down there, and the wheels will start to come off. And they're not going to be able to move. And God, and they're confused. Why can't we, you know... The whole thing is falling apart. Their whole scheme, their whole plan is starting to fall apart. And they're in confusion. And then they recognize, it says here, let's go back to this. And the Egyptians said, let's get away from the Israelites. The Lord is fighting for them against Egypt. So how did God fight against the Egyptian armies? He took off the wheels of their chariots and made them vulnerable. Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the sea so that the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and their chariots and horsemen. And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak. Now, why at daybreak? God did it at, he has perfect timing. He did it at daybreak so that they, you know, now that the they're all there in that area of the sea there, the Israelites have come up on the other side, and they're stuck in the middle, and it's daylight, and the Israelites can see what's happening down there, and God says, okay, now let's close shop. And they're all destroyed so that his people can see how he fights for them. So the water flowed back and covered the chariots and horsemen and the entire army of Pharaoh that had followed the Israelites into the sea. Not one of them survived. That's devastating. I mean, there's probably
over 1,000 chariots destroyed. And so, but the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. And that day, the Lord saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. And when the Israelites saw the great power the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him. They feared the Lord. In other words, they were filled with awe and reverence and a little bit of, wow, we don't want to mess with him. Because God is very powerful. And so that kind of display of power and how he was on their side, it says in some translations of the Old Testament, different versions of the Bible, it says, and they believed in him. But it's not just believed in him, because there are people who can believe that God exists. But that's not what this is. So in this translation, it says they put their trust in him. They trusted him. Now that's going to last a whole long time, maybe 3 or 4 days, until something new happens. That is so human, right? That is so human. We, you know, oh, God, thank you for saving. Oh, I can't believe it. My bills are paid now. I just didn't know what I was going to do. And a check came. Thank you, Lord. I trust God. He's so great. Until next week, when I lose my job, and then I don't trust him anymore. I'm fearful and worried. What am I going to do? So that is so typical of human beings. Now, here's the thing I wanted to focus on. Let's see if I can do this in enough time we have here. Here's the first point, and you don't have to write this down. It'll take you too long. One of the first things you learn about God is that he's not like you. That's one of the first things you learn about God. He isn't like you. And the Israelites are learning about God and who he is and what he's like. And they're finding out that he doesn't do the things. He's not like them. He's different. Remember we talked about holy, being separate, different, and holy? He is holy. He doesn't do the things. He's not like them. And so we find here, as we look at this, another truth is that he knows what he's doing even when you don't know what he's doing. Okay? He knows what he's doing even when you don't know what he's doing. And they're learning that because, tell me if this makes sense. We're trying to escape Egypt, so you're going to lead us into a dead end? That doesn't make any sense. So that we're trapped. So that we can't get out. So that we're helpless in this situation. And what are you doing? Why is this happening? How many people have said, why is God doing this to me? I've heard that a lot in my life. They don't understand what God is doing. And that's the case a lot of times because we're not God. He isn't like us. He doesn't do the things that we do. So when things are happening, don't ever get the idea that he doesn't know what he's doing just because you don't know what he's doing. Okay? So the next thing is that his priorities are not our priorities. His priorities are not your priorities. In other words, what you think is important, it's not really that high for him sometimes. You go, wow, this is really important. God surely is going to do this. And God says, no, that's not that important yet. And so when he is doing these things, here's what if his purposes is and what if his priorities is found in verse 4. He said, but I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. That was important to him. Now, what you think might have been important for the Israelites? That we not have any problems here, and then things go smoothly. That's my priority. That's what I want to see happening. And God says, no, that's not that important.
because I'm in charge, I'm in control, so it's all going to turn out. It's all going to be good. But I don't know. I don't know what you're doing. I'm afraid. Well, that's not my priority. Here's the priority, that I gain glory. And what does that mean? See, God is amazing. And it's in these circumstances we start to see how amazing he is. We wouldn't know how amazing he was until these kind of situations happen. You wouldn't know how much he loves you except for circumstances coming into your life and you realize, whoa, he does love me. He is powerful. He is these things. You don't know them until these kind of circumstances take place. So God says, I want who I am to be known, not only for my people, that they see the glory of God, but all the superlatives of him, but also the people of Egypt would know that I'm not one of their dime store gods. I am the only and real thing here, and I'm a God to be feared and reverenced and to be worshipped. And that is good. See, when you get to know the real God and who he is and how amazing he is, that's the best help you could have. That's the best resource you can have. In fact, if you could pass that down to your children, they can face anything. They can deal with anything because they know who God is. And so that's what he's passing on to his own people, that they might realize. See, otherwise you're going to be basing you're going to be dealing with life based on what you can see and what you can do. If you can't see it, you're not secure. If you can't deal with it and do it with the resources you have, you're going to be fearful. But with a believer who knows God, these things can be overwhelming as far as you're concerned, but you know the God is who he is, and so therefore you don't have to fear. You don't have to worry. You trust him, and you're able to face these things with a whole different perspective. So, third, about God and learning about who he is that he doesn't do the things the way we do things. He doesn't do things the way we do things. Remember, he said in another portion of the Bible, it says, my ways are not your ways. My thoughts are not your thoughts. He doesn't think the way you do. He doesn't do the things the way you do them. And when you're starting a relationship with God and you're getting to know him, that's a very important thing to realize. He's not like you. He doesn't do things the way you would do things. And he doesn't think the way you think. And when you come to realize that and accept that, there's going to be less stress in your life. Now, how many have been married for any amount of time realize that your spouse does not think the way you think?
You really don't want hands here.
No, I'm just raising mine because I've just combing my hair. He doesn't think the way you do, and he doesn't do things the way you would do them. And the same thing with a lot of relationships we have with people. We find that they think different, they do things different, and it can cause stress when you don't realize that you and them are not on the same page. I'm going to share this, and I hope I have permission, honey. I forgot to tell you about this. When we first got married, I don't know how many years it was into our marriage, but my wife said, could you clean the dishes, do the dishes? And I said, oh, yeah, sure, I'll do the dishes, no problem. So I did the dishes, washed them and cleaned them and put them away. And she came back in and said, you didn't do the sink. Well, I didn't know. You said do the dishes. Yeah, but that, you know, that's part of the, do the kitchen. You do, it, the whole thing is doing the dishes. And the floor. I didn't know that. I thought doing the kitchen was just doing, I mean, washing dishes. In fact, I thought I did more because I dried them. So here you have the people of God getting to know that God is different than them. He thinks different. He doesn't do things the same way. So it causes them stress because they assume that he's going to be doing it the way they do it, thinking the way they think,
and handling things the way they do, and he doesn't do things that way. And so the next point here is that he knows you better than you know yourself. He knows you better than you know yourself. He knows his people, and he knows that they don't trust him fully yet, and they need to learn to trust him. So how do you learn to trust somebody? Well, you have to give them to a place where they don't know, and they just have to go by what you say. They have to, well, how are we going to get there? We'll just get there. Trust me. Wait a second. I'm not good with this. That's the kind of situations he's putting them in and is going to continue to put them in so that they realize that they don't have control. He has control, and they're going to have to learn to trust him. And he knows the things about them that they need changed in their life. He knows there are things that are necessary to bring about this change. And a lot of times it's going to be dealing with difficult situations, with trials, hardships, etc., in order for them to be able to make those changes. So all those things he knows about them, he knows their weaknesses. Remember he said, I dare not take them over into the Philistines because they're going to get all spooked and they're going to want to go back to Egypt because they're just not going to be able to handle the battle yet. They're not ready. There hasn't been enough training yet. There hasn't been enough stretching and development of them yet as a people for them to go in and trust me when I say I will battle for you. They're just going to freak out. So he knows us. He knows us better than we know ourselves. And I'm sure that the Israelites didn't know anything about this as far as about themselves and God. Now, what do you do when God leads you into a dead end? What do you do when God leads you into a dead end? You have to recognize, he did this on purpose. He led them into a dead end on purpose. There was no way to escape. There was water on one side, there's mountains on the other side, there's desert on the other side, and the Egyptians on another side. They were trapped. You ever felt trapped? You ever felt like there's no way out of this? I don't know what to do. I seem to be in a dead end here, and I can't figure out what to do to solve this, what to do to get out of this, what to do to fix this. I am stymied. I've tried things, and everywhere I look, there's no possibilities. This is not possible. That's not possible. This is not possible. And I am in a dead end. Did you do this, God? Yes, he did. He lets us come in or brings us into these situations where it's a dead end. And what do we try to do when we're in those dead ends? Well, sooner or later we realize, I can't control these things. I can't fix this. I can't make this work. And this application goes to all kinds of situations, whether it be relationships or circumstances in your life. And there are times when there's nothing you can do. The other times God says, okay, now this is what I want you to do. I want you to do this, and there's something that you need to do in order for this to be fixed or this to be resolved, or et cetera. You know, if you want to have this resolved, you need to go apologize and humble yourself. And you're going, you got a plan B on that one? And you finally learn that you have to follow his direction for this to be resolved. But there are times when there aren't any of those. So what do? You give up trying to control your circumstances. You give up trying to control it. And you give it to God. Now here's a little thing that Charles Swindoll wrote in his diary. He says, when I panic, I run. When I run, I lose. And when I lose, God waits. Read that again, okay? When I panic, I run. And when I run, I lose. And when I lose, God waits. Now, the second part is, when I wait, he fights. When he fights, he wins. When he wins, I learn. Okay, let me try that again. When I wait, he fights. When he fights, he wins. And when he wins, I learn. So these people are learning to wait on God and have him fight for them where they had no ability to fight, when they were trapped and it was a dead end. And that's a hard thing to do. We're so used to trying to control things, right? But this is what God's trying to teach them. You know, there's that old story where someone has fallen off a cliff and manages to grab onto a limb, and they're holding on for dear life, and the limb is starting to pull away from the cliff there, and they call it, "Someone, anybody there? Help, help, anybody, can you help me?" And a voice comes out, "Yes, I can." "Okay, what can I do? What do you want me to do?" "Let go." "Is there anybody else up there that I can help me?" It's kind of the thing you find is that God is going, "Okay, now you just need to wait. And I will take care of you. You let go of control, and you'll fall right into my hands, and I'll take care of you." So when you're hemmed in on all sides, look up. That's the next step. Next thing you do, when you're hemmed in on all sides, look up. Turn your focus to God. Away from the dead end and all the circumstances that you can't control, and focus on God. Now, this says when you talk about looking up, it's implying here too, praying. And praying is a very important discipline in helping you focus and focus on God. So find yourself lifting your head and looking up to where your help will come from. You don't know how, you don't know when, you don't know where, but you know him, and you focus on who he is and what he has promised and what he says he'll do. Next, don't let fear control you. Don't let fear control you. There's several scriptures that talk about fear in the Bible, and I just kind of paraphrase here a couple of them. When I'm afraid, in the Psalms, David says, when I'm afraid, what do? I will trust in you. When fear comes, this is going to be my automatic response. I will trust in you. Usually, when I'm afraid, I will hide. When I'm afraid, I will run. David says, no, when I'm afraid, I will trust in you. Then you find scriptures all through the Bible says, fear not, for I am with you. And God was with them, but they didn't know about how to deal with that. Have faith instead of fear. Having faith control you rather than your fear control you. Making your faith in God and who he is your ground that you stand on. Now here's the thing too. When I am dealing with fear, it's a battle. Sometimes it's I'm stronger than other times. But sometimes, you know, I may be full of faith and not afraid one day. 3 days later, it strikes me and I'm going, what did I? Oh, this is horrible. And some other thoughts come in my mind and I'm filled with fear. Sometimes it's a battle to reaffirm faith. And so what you need to do is to recall the promises of God. Recall the promises of God. You fill your mind with those promises and take them as yours. What do I mean by that? Well, you personalize them. When God says, I will do this, 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 you personalize, God, you will do this, this, this for me. Rather than some third party or some historical figure, you personalize it and make it your own. And then give thanks for what he has done in the past. Don't redo the past, but remember clearly that God has done things for you in the past, and he hasn't changed, and he will in the future. And there's a couple more things I want to under this fear. And I think this is important for all of us, is to counsel yourself. Counsel yourself. Now, what do you think that means? You reason with yourself. Why am I so afraid, David says? Why, oh my, so why are you so downtrodden? Why are you so depressed? He asks himself that question, and then he starts to counsel himself. Hasn't God helped you in the past? And hasn't this happened? And he counsels himself and basically gives himself advice so that he's not captured by that fear. And then one more thing, bring mature believers for encouragement into your life, other people that can counsel you. Okay? Now, a couple more points. Another thing that Moses told them when they were all panicked, he said for them to stand and see the salvation of your God. So here's what we need to do again in these cul-de-sacs or these dead ends. Stand and see what God will do. In other words, don't run after into the situation. Stand and watch. See what God will do and let him work. Resist the temptation to get in there and fix it. Oh, this thing is a mess. It's getting worse. I got to get in there and fix it. No, nope. This is not the time. You know that you tried to fix it last time, just yesterday, and it blew up on you. What makes you think that you can fix it now? You need to wait and see what God, you're praying, you've got to wait and see what God's going to do. See him fight for you. Another thing, remember, God's answer may surprise you. God's answer may surprise you. What you once thought was impossible, God makes possible. What you once thought was impossible, God makes possible. Now, just think of this. Here the Jews are in a dead end situation. They look at the mountains, can't go there. Look at the sea, can't go there. Look at the desert, that's not an option. They got the Egyptian army in the back, that's not an option. What do? We have no way out. The guy says, yes, you do. I'm going to open up the ocean for you to walk through. Never occurred to me that would be an option. Oh, surprise, surprise. God thinks about things that you don't even have any knowledge of. He has options that you don't have. He has plans that you can't even conceive of. So his answer sometimes comes in a way that you never thought of, that you were totally sideswiped and you were just surprised that God did it this way. And finally, remember, during these times, God is working to change you. Remember, during these times, God is working to change you. Many times God puts you in a dead-end situation so that you have to deal with yourself, so that he can bring the pressure to bear and the hardship in your life, so that he can break you of a habit or a way of looking at things, a way of dealing with things, or some sin in your life or some problem in your life. And he brings those things to bear so that you can change. Now, if the way life worked is that the way you bring change is you tell people the right thing to do and they do it, wouldn't that be great? Parenting would be fantastic. Now, you need to clean your room because we want you to know that that's a skill you need to have, honey. You need to be able to clean your room and put your clothes away and make your bed and all those things. So that's what you need to do this next week. Done. I'm finished. I did my parenting. It doesn't work that way. And it doesn't work that way with us. We don't change a lot of times until we go through circumstances where God puts pressure on us to see that we can't escape. There's no way out until you change, until you get rid of those things that he's pointing out and change your attitude toward them or repent of them. There's not going to be any change and you're going to be stuck. So another thing finally here is that look at these things, that these dead ends, as God proving that he loves you. If he didn't love you, he could just let you stay the same and just be your miserable self. But he doesn't and he won't. So, for instance, you're a very impatient person, and it causes all kinds of problems in your life. It causes all kinds of issues with people and things, and it makes you miserable because you don't have patience. So God says, you know what, I'm going to put him in a situation where it's going to take a long time for it to get any better. And he'll just have to have patience. He'll develop. He'll grow patient because I'm much more patient than he is. I can outlast him. And he may be the most stubborn person in the world, but he hasn't seen anything until he comes against me. I change not. And I have a whole lot of more gumption than you do. And you're gonna have to finally say, I surrender. I'll do it. Wait, I'm waiting. And whenever you say, whenever you want, I'll wait as long as you want me to. So, a lot of things there. Sorry I didn't have the notes for you on this one. But the whole thing about getting to know God, we'll find us learning from the experience of the Jews, the Israelites here, as they go through the wilderness. We'll learn a lot of lessons that hopefully we won't have to go through ourselves and that we'll respond to. But there are some lessons that you may not have that option, and God will put you through circumstances that seem to be a dead end. But keep this in mind. God uses it for your good, and he will work through this to bring about good things in your life if you'll but do the things we talked about this morning. So let's pray. Father, we thank you for your word and how amazing you are. What a wonderful God we have. Lord, continue to teach us about who you are and what we need to do to develop and deepen this relationship we have with you, because we know that you're not like us, and we don't think like you. We don't do the things the way you do things. Help us to be like you. We thank you, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.